Hey Pacers fans, this is Miles Turner, and you're listening to Pacers Sound.
Right edge, ball stolen. Thaddeus Young ahead to Victor Oladipo for a spinning two-hand slam.
And we welcome you into another Sideline Guys podcast alongside Jeremiah Johnson, TV host and sideline reporter. I'm radio host and sideline reporter Pat Boylan. We are coming off a Pacers win over the New York Knicks that came on Sunday night. It is Monday afternoon as we tape this. The Pacers have one more game before the All-Star break. So this show, we'll talk a little bit about that Knicks game, with how the Pacers have played in general, maybe even get some of your rain delay thoughts that you had out in New Orleans. But let's start with maybe the most pertinent news of the last couple of days, which is Kevin Pritchard talking for actually about 25 minutes. It was a pretty in-depth discussion with Kevin Pritchard, Pacers president, about the trade deadline. Of course, topics of the Oladipo trade came up. What the Pacers could do going forward came up. To me, there were a handful of takeaways from this that really jumped out to me, but I'm curious if you were to pick one or two of those, what they would be.
When Kevin Pritchard addressed the media when he took over the job from Larry Bird, and also when he introduced Victor Oladipo, Domas Sabonis, and Darren Collison, I think that he said a few things then that he hoped this team would become maybe in 2 or 3 years. And I think that it was interesting, his evaluation of this team at the trade deadline is almost exactly what he wanted. I mean, there were some things he wanted to see from his roster as he put it together, and he was talking in May and he was talking in June. And I kept the notes from one of those summer press conferences. And it's amazing to see how it's all worked out. Remember, he was saying he wanted athletes, he wanted toughness, and he wanted guys that were willing to play unselfish. Tough kids, play together, flyers. And you think about watching this team this season, and that's really what you have. You have an unselfish bunch. You have one player who's a star right now in Victor Oladipo. He is an all-star. His stats compare favorably to the elite players in the game, but he is probably the least selfish player you would expect with those kind of numbers. True, he takes more shots. He has the ball in his hands at the end of games. But he also is probably someone who likes talking about his teammates as much, if not more, than himself. The toughness, it could be improved a little bit, but I think when the going gets tough, they've got a lot of guys that are tough sort of for their position. And so listening to him talk, it was obvious that he probably, if you would have asked him in August, September, trade deadline, it's a time he tweaks the roster. That's kind of what he's always done in his career. And he was convinced by the players that there was no need to tweak it right now, and that this group, that was a something-to-prove type of team, deserved to continue to be able to try to prove themselves the rest of this regular season and on into the playoffs. And I think it's impressive with Kevin Pritchard how he's probably been willing to adapt. I mean, he's been in this job and in this sort of front office type of position for a number of years now. But I feel like if you asked him how much he's changed in the last 9 to 12 months, I think he would tell you, you know, quite a bit. And he still has the same principles when he tries to put together a team. But he's really become, and I saw someone on Twitter reply to something that I posted about his comments, that he's the player's GM. And that's probably something that not many GMs really, it's probably a fine line, because yeah, you can't just be listening to the players and making decisions. And he's not doing that, but he's valuing their opinion. He's communicating with them. And the group he's put together has really been, one of his words, the Pacers' ethos. It's fit the Pacers' ethos to a T, and so there was no need to bring someone else in that might upset that.
He said 6 different guys came up to him and said, hey, you know, I would love for you to keep this team together. I feel we really got something going good here, and, you know, I would like to see this play out. He felt like, he said in specifics, one player came and talked to him and said, specifically, that he felt they deserved to see the season out and what it could be. Talking to a guy like Al Jefferson, we had him on the Fox Sports Indiana postgame show. And
the bucket getter?
The bucket getter, yes. Typically, when Al plays only a handful of minutes, scored 6 points, you know, not necessarily high on the list, but I thought, coming off the Kevin Pritchard interview, that he would be kind of important to talk to, because he actually brought up Al pretty early in those discussions, that he said, look, we could have moved Al's contract, but he felt that his, and in Kevin Pritchard's words, his effect on the locker room was gripping. And you could tell Al, a player who has been through a lot in this league, including tons of highs, certainly took that as one of, I think, the more rewarding things he's ever heard from somebody in a position of power in the NBA. And he actually said that he went up and talked to Kevin Pritchard and told him thank you after the trade deadline for keeping this team intact. That all, I think, was extremely significant. We'll see how it plays out here going forward. That's for us to analyze. The other aspect of it, which I thought was interesting, is just how open and frank he was about their positive cap situation. And we've talked about this from time to time. That cap situation was decent at the trade deadline, but it's really going to play and pay dividends, I think, for them in this offseason and a couple off seasons forward, because depending on how a couple of player options go with Thaddeus Young and Corey Joseph, they could have, in his words, between $30 to $50 million this offseason. And we're heading into an offseason once we get there where a lot of teams are strapped by bad deals from the 2016 cap rising. So he was extremely confident, extremely optimistic that when you and I are here and we're doing one of these shows before the draft or before free agency, that they're going to be able to be major players then. And so why mess with it now? Why mess with it in season when the offseason provides an opportunity like that? I think if they got something that they felt like they had to act on then, they would have done it. But I think you would have had to blow Kevin Pritchard away and Chad Buchanan and Peter Dinwiddie, you would have had to blow them away with an offer, I think, to get them to do something because of how well things have gone at this point in the season. It was kind of nice, I think, that the team has put the GM in a position where he didn't feel like, the president in a position where he didn't feel like he had to make a move at the deadline.
And the other thing that I liked hearing him say is that this offseason, you know, you'll never bring back the same 14 or 15 players. There will always be changes. But the last two off seasons have been tumultuous, I think, would be, you know, you can pick your different words, but there has been a major significant roster turnover in each of the last two off seasons. And he was quick to point out he does not expect that this off season, because the whole point of this season, while everyone wants to make the playoffs, was to kind of get a foundation in place and then build around that. And I thought it was interesting what he said about, you know, building a championship type of franchise and the theory that you have to have three elite superstars. And that, I think, is still what most people think you have to do. But I thought it was interesting how much he thinks of Victor Oladipo, and to say that he is an elite superstar and we think we can put complementary pieces around him, because if you have two or three superstars on the floor, maybe much like Victor was in a position in Oklahoma City, even though he was maybe not viewed at that level last season, then you take kind of the ball out of Victor's hands. I tend to think you get as many good players as you can and then you make it work. And so I think he would not be one to shy away from another elite player, but that's not necessarily the only way to maybe build this team. And if you have a lot of, you know, B to B plus level players and you put them around an A to an A plus level player, it might really work compared to three A's and then two C's or something like that on the court. So a number of things that I enjoyed hearing and from Kevin Pritchard, and I think it's worth even going back and listening to it again via Pacers.com or any other reporter that has the video or the audio, but some really good comments, and I thought it was good to follow that up with an impressive win. I mean, I don't, maybe impressive isn't even the right word, but it was one of those games that you never really felt like the Pacers were going to lose, and I never saw any lack of effort. Defensive intensity, maybe early on against the Knicks, maybe a little bit lacking. It wasn't the same as you saw early against Boston. We haven't talked since that game either, so I was really struck by how well they defended early on against the Celtics. I noticed it on the first possession when Thaddeus Young got out there and really caused problems for Al Horford, and then I talked to him at halftime. I kind of led him down that direction. He said, I thought I really set the tone with the way I kind of defended Al Horford to start that game. And I think that's something you can watch for in certain games and see if they're locked in defensively, how much disruption they are causing, you know, on the perimeter, forcing opponents out of their comfort zone. Maybe it wasn't there early on against the Knicks, but they certainly did what they needed to do, and they got a big win.
Those last two games, the Boston game and the Knicks game, they were extremely different. One team you're playing at the time, the top team in the Eastern Conference record-wise on the road. The more recent version of that was you're playing a struggling Knicks team without their best player at home. But I think they both left reasons, and maybe this is, I feel like this is just kind of natural and maybe I need to do it a little bit less, but I always find myself thinking back to last season. And last season's team was really good at home, won 29 games at home, really struggled on the road. But I enjoyed these last two wins for reasons that were very, very difficult to accomplish last year that I think this team is doing. I think it's a sign of maturity. I think it's a sign of being tougher-minded. That Boston game, you know, look, last year's team had a lot of great moments. You lose a 26-point lead. That game on the road, as Boston is making that comeback and doing a lot of it with still plenty of time left to finish it off, it wasn't like this was a mad rush to try to beat the buzzer with the comeback. That had the look of where a lot of teams in the Pacers situation would lose that game by like 10. You lose the 26-point lead. They had absolutely no momentum. Boston had 34 points in the third quarter, hitting a almost half-court shot at the buzzer the third quarter. Even up four, you're going, oh man, this is gonna be difficult. The Pacers lost that lead and came back and won it with Miles Turner making a couple big plays in Oladipo. And then to the Knicks game here more recently, a game that you need to take care of business, and they didn't always play at their best, and they let New York maybe hang around a little bit too much and cut into that deficit. But I've really enjoyed the wins this year where the Pacers have been the favorite going in. They've come away with the victory because it felt like last year there were so many times where that wasn't the case, especially in situations like this. The Pacers are 6 over. They can get to a season high 7 over. And this is the kind of game where you really feel like you should get it. Felt like maybe in years past, those are the ones they couldn't get over the hump. And I'm not maybe saying they're over the hump by any stretch, but it seems like this year's team has been more consistent and does a much better job at taking care of business. And in those last two games, two very different games, two very different examples, but I think two things that this year's team can hang their hat on that maybe last year's couldn't.
And how much confidence, Pat, do you have in this team at about the 3-minute mark of a tie game being able to execute offensively? And I feel like over the last few seasons, it was clear out and hope Paul makes a shot. And he made some shots, you know, with 3 minutes to go in a game, 4 minutes to go in a game, but sometimes in the crucial moments he did. And sometimes the offensive execution, you just wondered what play was called. And, you know, we can praise the Pacers' offense. Sometimes it's simply they're executing that high pick and roll pretty well, and they have really good pick and roll players right now. And Victor is able to make plays, and they've got a guy who likes to kind of be on the corner to keep defenses honest and Boyan. And I think that Nate has done such a good job mixing some of the combinations late. But I do think a big difference is they've had so many experiences in some of these close games, and they're not perfect. We could probably go through and look at their clutch field goal percentage in some of those games within 5 points in the final 2 or 3 minutes and find maybe they're at the league average or maybe a little bit above, but I feel like they were, you know, at the bottom in the past. And I think all the experience that they have, not just on offense in clutch situations, but on defense as well, has really paid off. And at the same time, the Knicks game is one where there are plenty of times bad teams make runs and you're up 20 and all of a sudden you look and it's a 6 or 7 point game and it wilts away. Now, the Knicks didn't have Porzingis, and they didn't have some elite players, but Hardaway Jr. is still capable of knocking down shots, and a number of those guys that have something to prove were on the court hoping they could have their star moment. They were trying to win the game. People think New York is in a position where maybe they want to tank. There was no tanking going on in that game. They really wanted to win that game. They had a 5-game losing streak, and the lead went from 6 back up to 12 or 13 pretty quickly. So I'm just seeing a lot of clutch plays. I'm seeing some, you know, playing hard. And I also liked in your interviews after the game, I don't even know if you necessarily led them in this direction, how willing people were to say, and even it started, I think, with Nate McMillan's press conference about the importance of finishing this All-Star break, this pre-break stretch run with the win against the Nets. And I think they are off on Monday. They're going to practice. They're going to go on the road. And I could be wrong. The Nets could win that game. They've won, you know, 18, 19 games this season. So it would not shock me to see Brooklyn win that game. But I don't think it'll be one of those situations where this team will be thinking about the All-Star break and not give a great effort.
To your point about the close games, this isn't a perfect stat because oftentimes a game is very close and then you get fouling and free throws at the end and the game is no longer decided by 3 points or less because of that. But just in the realm of what a 3 point or less game is, the Pacers are 6-1 this year, and that's the best winning percentage in the NBA in games decided by 3 or less. They're also 15-13 in games decided by 10 or more. So they're doing well. They're getting, I guess, more blowouts than they are getting blown out, and they're winning the close games, which of course is a really good combination. And the biggest reason we all know for that, Victor Oladipo, the Pacers, there's some wild, it's amazing to me because as somebody who, you know, I like stats, but I often think sometimes we can get a little bit too bogged down with them because they become tough to present in a simple manner that's easily digestible. So when you get a stat that is easily digestible and tells a really significant story, those are the ones I really like. And it's amazing how many of those kind of stats there are with Victor Oladipo this year. For example, the Pacers are 32-19 with Victor Oladipo when he's played. I mean, that's remarkable. 32-19 when Oladipo has played. You delve a little bit closer into some of his statistics and why that is. He, by the way, had his 40th consecutive game with a steal on Sunday night. That matches Ron Artest for the franchise record. So if he gets a steal in Brooklyn, he will have 41 consecutive games with a steal. That's a franchise record. I was looking this up yesterday because I think he had 5 or 6 steals last night and maybe 5 or 6 steals in Boston as well. He is
6 now, last night, 5 against Boston, so 11 over the last two games.
He's now 3rd in the NBA in steals. He is 0.01 behind Eric Bledsoe. And then if he gets into second, he's only behind Paul George, who leads the NBA in steals this year. But when you consider, look, you know, and I don't want to make this, again, a comparison to last year, a comparison to Paul George, because what Oladipo does well and what George does well, a lot of those are different skill sets. But when you consider that George, one of the top players, defensive players in the NBA, and can really show that when he's next to a guy like Westbrook, is doing what he's doing, and there's the potential for this guy that wasn't even really ever considered. You know, he's always been considered not a bad defender, not a liability, but not a guy that's going to shut anybody down. Well, it would be a little ironic if the season ended and Paul and Victor were 1 and 2 on the steals chart. That would be...
And Paul is probably, I would say, if you had a vote right now, he probably wins Defensive Player of the Year because there's enough momentum, I think, from some of the national writers, and his numbers do speak for themselves. And just watching those two Pacers OKC games, you saw what a problem he is with his length on defense. But you never really heard about Victor's defense when the trade happened. You heard about, you know, the shooting needed to improve, the contract may be a little too much for the next 4 years.
And now the contract's a steal. Now Pritchard is looking at the contract as an asset. Like, of course the player's good, but the contract's an asset. They're getting him for less than market value.
Makes me want to just be a counter anytime I hear someone make an initial trade reaction argument. Just take the other side, because you've got a pretty decent chance you're going to be right.
Yeah. The other stat I wanted to bring up, last night was his 10th game this season where he scored 30 or more. And he only had 9 in his career coming into this year. So in 291 games coming into this year, he had 9 30-point games. And in 51 this year, he has had 10 30-point games.
And I know, and he could have had a quadruple-double last night.
He was at least on the watch. I knew the steals would have been tough.
I thought the triple-double was really going to happen in a couple of...
He was close.
If he gets that assist, I think they might have found a way to get an extra rebound. But, they weren't even concerned about it. It was something I think on Twitter people were watching, and I was trying to follow and prepare for the potential walk-off interview if he had his first triple-double since his days with the Magic. And then, you know, no one really cared. They just wanted to get that win.
Yeah. No, and yeah, they're certainly, I would doubt Victor even necessarily had thought of that. And I asked him in the radio interview, sometimes the positive of who I get as a radio interview walk-off, the positive from the TV perspective is I can kind of judge how they answered questions and maybe kind of reword them another way. And I asked him about the 40 consecutive games with a steal matching a franchise record. And I just kind of asked him what it meant to him. And he just kind of said, you know, I don't really know. I just try to play defense. And so I felt it was important to ask it again because we had referenced it. I know you guys had referenced it on the TV broadcast. I felt like I need to ask it again, but in a kind of different way. And this time I asked him, does he take pride in it, hoping to kind of lead him into a however he wanted to answer. And he was better with it. But to your point, he doesn't really like talking about himself, and especially individual accolades. We touched on in the radio interview the being honored with the All-Star jersey and, you know, the fact that he maybe got to show off a couple of dunk contest moves, and he just kind of maybe didn't shoot it down but just didn't really want to go in that direction yet because there's still a game left before they get to that point. And it is Brooklyn, and was going back, and recent memory was telling me that the Pacers have struggled this time of the year previously. Last year they lost, remember, they got to 29-22, they lost 6 games in a row going into the All-Star break. And then a couple of years ago, it was either 2 or 3 years ago, they lost at home to Charlotte by like 30 points or so going into that was the Marvin Williams hit a bunch of threes game. So,
and then there was a Mavericks loss before the All-Star break, I think, which was before the Danny Granger trade, which might have been If I have my games and years correct, there was a bad loss right before the break, which might have been, you know, got to shake this up a little bit, and that didn't turn out to work out so well.
And I don't necessarily think if they lose to Brooklyn that that would fall in those kind of categories, because what's interesting about this year's NBA, the floor has risen. The bottom teams are not as bad as previous year NBA teams. For example, Brooklyn's on pace to win like 25 games. So that's not good, but it's not horrible. And there's no real I mean, even Atlanta, they got a win against Detroit last night. You know, Schroeder's a good player. They've got some talent there, Torian Prince. So the floor has risen. So every single road game for a team like the Pacers, which is an above average team, but one that's going to be fighting for a playoff berth likely for a majority of the season, there is no such thing as a road game where, you know, is a definite win by any stretch of the imagination. So we'll see what happens in Brooklyn on Wednesday, but you certainly like the attitude they're taking toward it, which is that it's important to close this stretch strong and not start thinking about that break before you get there, because I think that is natural human tendency. And I think just winning this game against New York helps with that a little bit, because even if they don't get the win against Brooklyn, they at least get 2 out of 3 coming into that Brooklyn game, or coming into the All-Star break, I should say. But that said, you get this one, you get to 8 over, and then you've got 3 games coming up after the All-Star break, assuming they don't throw the Pelicans game in there, against bottom of the NBA teams as well. So this end of February, this into the All-Star break and out of the All-Star break into February, I think is a real big opportunity for them. If they could win 3 of the next 4, for example, which are very doable, then you're looking at a team that's 35 and 26, 9 over, and then all of a sudden you really like where you're standing.
And I think the main thing over the next month is health. Is if this team can stay relatively healthy and they can get, you know, they need Darren Collison back. It is a credit to the rest of the team. Now, you've only had the 2 games since that Monday loss to the Wizards due to the rain out in New Orleans, but you're not worried as much about Darren Collison right now, but you're just, you know, you're a little more thin than you were, and you can't afford Victor to not be 100%. I think that goes without saying. You need Miles Turner to be healthy and out of foul trouble. So there are some things that you could lose a game maybe you're supposed to win if somebody gets banged up, if somebody gets in foul trouble. You're just in a situation where if you have everybody or everybody minus one key player, and that's not Victor Oladipo, I think you're in a very good position to not only get into the playoffs, but I think maybe what you didn't want to do right now is avoid 7 or 8. Given where Cleveland is right now, and if they have a little bit of a resurgence, I think you really got to say, let's make this 4-5 game a real goal and a distinct possibility, and there's no reason why you can't. Now, you look at the March schedule is difficult, and if they do throw that Pelicans game in there at a point where maybe you are going to have a little bit of a break and then you've got to travel to New Orleans, you know, it's going to be that much more difficult. And we've discussed the end of the season slate where you have, I think, a stretch of 6 of 7 away from home and the 1 home game's against the Warriors. So you don't have this built-in buffer. You've got to create some of that separation right now and then hope, because you can win some games going into that, you have that much more momentum that you can win some of those games against maybe some Western Conference teams. So that said, to be 7 over .500 right now, it's just it's been a joy to watch. It's been a joy to cover. It's been, and it's fun to project forward. I always enjoy March. I think March is probably my favorite month of the year because of, you know, it used to be for college basketball and high school basketball, and now you combine it where it's still the regular season for the NBA, but it's such a fun time because you get to the point where every night there are 2 or 3 games that really impact seeding and standings and potential playoff situations. And now for the, you know, 4th straight season, the Pacers are in kind of one of these modes where every game could matter. And, you know, go back 4 seasons and the Pacers missed the playoffs by 1 game. And then each of the last 2, it's kind of come down to the last week of the season. You hope now it doesn't maybe get to that point and you're kind of watching the 9 seed. To me, I'm watching the Pistons. And for every game the Pacers win and the Pistons lose, I see, okay, that's a little more separation between being in and being out. But I say now you want to be 4 or 5 and see what happens. And so when the Pacers get back from the All-Star break, you've got a week of February, and then you're into March, and then life is good.
I think it's an interesting mix if you're a fan, a media member, and of course you're allowed to take, you know, this in whichever direction you feel. But it's an interesting mix of the team you have right now is, I think, much better, or at minimum better, than just about everybody thought going into the season, and realizing maybe the potential for this team could be what you said. Maybe even it is a home first-round playoff series, a playoff series win. Certainly making the playoffs, I think, is an absolute goal right now. But also just kind of thinking back to the beginning of the year and how far this thing has come. And look, when you try to predict any sports league and the amount of teams or wins a team is going to have at the beginning of the season, it's an extremely difficult exercise. It's an exercise in futility. But just for, you know, a little bit of realization of how far things have come since mid-October, I went back to a couple of sites that I, you know, just will regularly look at for NBA coverage and looked at their preseason predictions. ESPN predicted the Pacers at 32 wins. They're at 32 wins with 2 months left to go in the season. CBS Sports had them at 31 wins. Like, they've already beaten CBS Sports' projection before the All-Star break. 538, which I use a lot to determine, they have, I think, an interesting playoff odds model, had the Pacers before the season started at 20% to make the playoffs, which was actually higher than just about everybody else had. And right now, the Pacers, according to 538, are at 89%, and Basketball Reference has a playoff predictor. I don't know how those things predict these things, but the Basketball Reference has them at 90%. So, you know, obviously you don't want the players looking at that kind of thing. It's more our job to look at that and speculate. But to be at this point in the season, you think about, there's 2 months' worth of games left with the All-Star breaks in there, 25, 26 games, whatever it is. And the Pacers right now, with 2 months left, with so much uncertainty still left in the season for everybody, the fact that you've got these mathematical formulas predicting the Pacers at right around 90% is really remarkable. And the way you turn the 90 into 100 is by taking care of the teams you have to beat. The Pacers have a tough schedule coming up after they get out of February. So taking care of these, they had a stretch of five February games against teams well under 500. It started with the Knicks. They're 1-0. They've got four more coming up. If you go 4-1 during that stretch, I think you're very happy with, you know, what you've been able to do. And that gives you a little bit of buffer going forward. You mentioned March is difficult, and maybe the Pacers will catch a break by, you know, maybe that Golden State game later in the year at home. The Warriors have everything wrapped up. Maybe those last two Charlotte games, Charlotte is out of it, and so they're, you know, potentially, you know, sitting Walker or somebody like that for the year. Those are hypotheticals. But the key now, I think, is winning the games you're supposed to win, and most of them. And then if you can, you know, steal a couple of those other ones too, you're in a position where if you can just kind of keep the status quo going, you're going to make the playoffs. It's a team like Detroit who really has to start to scamper. And if you're the Pacers, you know, these next four games, I think, kind of represent that, starting with Brooklyn, and then we'll have the All-Star break. And Pelicans are going to be thrown in there somewhere. Kevin Pritchard said that they should know in the next day or two when that is going to be. But it's kind of interesting. We're almost a week past that game now, and we still don't know when the makeup date is. Which it's, I looked at the schedule. It's tough. Like, they could maybe move it that Thursday before the Pacers play on Friday after the All-Star break is technically an NBA open date. A few teams are playing. They could try to throw it there. But March is so compact for both teams that there's a chance. I don't know what the protocol is here. If that's out of the CBA or anything, there's a chance they might have to give one of the two teams a back-to-back-to-back. It's not really fair who you give it to, but it was in New Orleans and it was on their floor. So you might think that if they have to do it, New Orleans might be the team that suffers in that regard, but we don't know.
It's an interesting judge and jury, you know, who makes the final decision, because I did ask Kevin Pritchard about that New Orleans game yesterday, just because I wanted to have something to maybe be able to report during the broadcast. There were enough things to talk about that we did not get into it, and we did not get a definitive answer, but he said what you might expect, that any date you pick, it's kind of bad for someone, and you don't want it to be awful, I don't think, for anyone, but you understand it's not a great situation. And he did say they expected to make an announcement in the next couple of days. So I think they pretty much have a date that they're close to confirming, and they've got to make sure everything sort of fits. I do think if one team or two teams were at a situation where there was a chance it may not matter in the standings, they wouldn't be against playing 81 games and not having that game. But
just seeing if they can get out of it.
But you look where New Orleans is and you look where the Pacers are, I cannot imagine one game either way would not affect both teams. And the one that would work the best to me would maybe be the Thursday after the season ends, because then you would have the potential that week to say, yeah, not going to play that game. Or if it did not matter to one team, then it's your G League All-Stars get to take the court. Right. But if you're the Pacers and you have to go on the road for a Saturday playoff game, do you really want to mess around being in New Orleans on the Thursday before?
No. So I don't know what you – and especially, you know, is there a competitive balance issue with the rest of the league if they were to end on a Wednesday, and that – if the Pacers didn't need it, but New Orleans did, and the Pacers are throwing...
Yeah, I said it should be a Pacers home game because it wasn't the Pacers' fault, and if you throw an extra game, it needs to be here. But then, you know, a team like the Bucks might say, no, that's not fair.
Right, right. Or if the Pacers are resting people because this game is after the season when it wasn't supposed to be after the season.
But that happens all the time, and that's sort of luck
sometimes.
Of the draw.
It does happen sometimes. But yeah, that I mean, that's it almost seems like they can't win with this.
Back to your point originally about happy with where this team is and the record compared to projections. I want to know what you think about this. And I don't know that there's an answer to it or a solution, and I'm not sure that there should be. But, you know, we both kind of listen to podcasts and read articles. And, you know, I talk to reporters in other cities when we go there. It feels like this is still such an under-the-radar story and team compared to what it should be. I feel like if there was another team that had been projected to be at 32 wins and had 32 by the All-Star break, you know, you would be hearing so much about it. And I don't know that this team needs it, and it's probably better that they don't, because if you think back to December, I remember something Bill Baino told me that he thought when they went on that little losing streak or that stretch where they weren't playing as well, he thought it all started around the Oklahoma City game when the hype started to come and the additional reporters came. And true, they were just there for that one story, but they were starting to pay attention more to the Pacers. And he thought guys got, you know, maybe a little selfish on the court and wanted to kind of show themselves a little bit. But if it happens again, you have to be prepared for it, because if you win games, attention will come, and I think that's what we call a pleasant problem. But it does surprise me that there isn't more attention, more talk, more chatter about this team. Everyone says, oh, Victor Oladipo, he's going to be maybe most improved player. And I think that Kevin Pritchard has to be at least top two in general manager or front office executive of the year. And you think about Nate McMillan in that top five, at least, for coach of the year, and it depends on where everything turns out. But it just seems like they're under the radar.
I hear you, and I agree with you. And I'm not. I was trying to think, like, as you're saying that, like, why might that be? I think some of it, you know, as we got closer, I think some of it was, let's see, can the Pacers, you know, do this for more than half the season? Then we maybe got to the trade deadline. So maybe these next, once we get out of the All-Star break, maybe that starts to happen. And if it doesn't, then, you know, you don't know. Obviously, it's a smaller market, but you'd like to think, interesting story, who cares if the team is in New York?
And if you tune in and watch this team, how are you not entertained?
Right, right. So, yeah, no, and I mean, Oladipo, I think, is an interesting all-star in the way that he's very personable. He's a good soundbite. You know, he's all of the off-the-court things you would want him to be. He's good, you know, with the fans and the community. So it's a good question. I don't know. I'm struggling for answers why that is, but I agree with you. And I guess it'll just be interesting to see if the Pacers can keep this up over the next month. Maybe people all of a sudden are going to be like, holy crap, we are 10 games left in the season, and the Pacers are like in the five spot. Oh my God, it's almost like it's...
Exactly, and you think about when people rank playoff matchups and series, and people like often try to discuss, well, what's the NBA TV series? And even when the Pacers had Paul George, you know, a Pacers-Hawks series was, you know, a number of the games were on NBA TV. And yeah, you're going to, you know, the Cavs games and the Celtics and the Warriors and the Rockets, those are automatically going to be the ones that are the big-time national TV audiences. And I don't personally care. I think everyone probably knows my take on the situation in terms of national TV. Is Fox Sports Indiana broadcasts 82 games, so I honestly could care less if they're on national TV. But I do think there is something about some of those games that are good for the brand and for the team. And, you know, I have friends in California, and, you know, they're NBA fans, but maybe not enough to buy league pass. And so for that, their kids will watch the Pacers in the playoffs, but there aren't as many opportunities right now. And I did want to, I looked this up a couple weeks ago, and I'm just going to, because I did the research and didn't take a long time, but the Pacers were getting ready to play the Wizards. And I think of the Wizards as a team, to me right now, similar to the Pacers. Now, when the season started, sure, they had John Wall and Bradley Beal, and you didn't know what the Pacers had. But as I am going to tune in as an average NBA fan, and I'm not, but if I was, I would think, yeah, a Wizards versus random team game, sure, somewhat interesting. Not any more interesting than the Pacers. And so with 30 games left in the season, and we've passed that point right now, the Wizards had 5 scheduled for TNT, 6 scheduled for ESPN, 5 NBA TV. You can add it up. 16 games of those 30 were scheduled for one of the three, you know, national networks. At that point, before the Pacers played the Wizards, 28 games were left for the Pacers. Zero on any of those outlets. And those decisions, most of them are made before a season starts, so it doesn't really matter. And I'm not here to try to play like, you know, small market, woe is us, because like I said, I don't really care. But I do think moving forward, this team has a foundation right now. And I do hope, you know, you can't find a Victor Oladipo jersey on the NBA team store. I mean, to me, that's something that bothers me a little bit. And, you know, just thought I'd sound off a little bit. But I do hope moving forward, there is a little bit of, you know, a realization of what's going on here and appreciation around the league, not just in our market.
It feels like we're due for one of those Zach Lowe.
Exactly. How many times can he go report on the Bucks?
Yeah.
Spend a week in Indianapolis.
It does seem like I would bet one is coming, but we'll see. It's not going to come before the All-Star break, but let's transition here while we have 5-10 minutes left into the All-Star break, because the Pacers, I think, are definitely more represented than anybody else would have projected at the beginning of the year. Victor Oladipo is in the dunk contest. Of course, the All-Star game, Domantas Sabonis, the Rising Stars Challenge. So for our pick three, we wanted to look at some of these other events around the actual game. The Skills Challenge, the dunk contest, and the three-point contest.
Let's get out your pen and paper. We're going to make our picks. Write them down, and feel free to tweet us if you think we're wrong, but hopefully we can at least get one or two right amongst our – we'll each have a pick. So you get to pick first on the skills challenge, okay. And I will not pick the same person as you.
Okay, I don't think you're going to pick who I was going to take anyway, so I think we're safe on the first one.
And this is our understanding. It's the same as last year with four bigs and four guards, and I believe they had the bracket split up with the bigs at the top of the bracket and the guards at the bottom, or the, you know, the more ball handler type players, and then a matchup head-to-head, a big against a guard.
So the options are Joel Embiid, Buddy Hield, Lou Williams, Andre Drummond, Al Horford, Lowry Markin, and Spencer Dinwiddie, Jamal Murray. I'm not in love with the guards here, so I'm inclined to pick a big, just because if you're going to pick a big when the guards don't blow at least me away, I'm going to pick a big, and I'm going to go with maybe if you were to put odds on this guy would be, well, Drummond might be at the very end, but this guy might be close to the very end. I'm going to go with the rookie in Chicago, Lowry Markin.
Oh, you know what? That is exactly who I was leaning towards.
Really?
But you state your case.
I figured that he would have been, well, just because he's probably the least well-known name of that group so far, but I'm going to go with him because he gets the comparisons to Dirk, which probably aren't fair. You know, if he's not probably going to be one of the top five scorers of all time. But we've seen him a few times. You know, the one road game I did was in Chicago, so I got to see him a third time, and I've been really, really impressed with him. You know, maybe he doesn't have the out-of-this-world athleticism, but I think he does everything else really well. I think he's a good passer. He's a very good shooter. I think he kind of fits the category for all of these, and I think, you know.
And you saw him firsthand in Chicago,
right,
your one
yes.
road game.
Yes, so maybe I'm biased, because the one time I did a game away from home, he was there. But I'm going Lowry Markkanen with my pick. And I guess I stole yours. I would have guessed that this would have been near the end.
Well, here's my thought about it. In watching it last year, I really do appreciate all the All-Star Weekend events because, you know, my son, I talk about on here, but it's probably his favorite thing. And so we'll get to his thoughts on the actual game. But we enjoy watching maybe the Rising Stars Challenge, haven't gotten as much into, but obviously the Saturday night events and also the Sunday game. You know, it's must-see. It's part of the weekend. I enjoy being off and be able to watch those games. I think with the Skills Challenge, you want someone who you're confident they have one opportunity to hit a three-point shot, they're going to make it. And you can be as fast as you want and dribble through the cones. You don't want to make a mistake, but you want to get to that point where if you had one opportunity, who's shooting and you think, oh, it's going in. And I feel like in watching Lowry Markkanen, he has a little bit of Porzingis in him, and that kind of – I think he won last year, correct, against Hayward?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because I was cheering for all of the Indiana connections,
was
the one that could have been either an IHSAA or Indiana player sweep.
I forgot.
And that was because Victor won the talent show contest even in the afternoon, I believe. So I really think Lowry Markkanen, I have confidence in his three-point shooting. I'm going to, you know, I'll X out Embiid. He's just going to be trying to make people laugh. Buddy Hield possibility. I'm going to go Spencer Dinwiddie just because I think he'll take the event maybe more seriously than some in that he's not really arrived on the scene as a star in the NBA, and I think it would be big to him to win maybe more than it would for Al Horford or, you know, Andre Drummond. Lou Williams is someone that maybe I'd consider, but I'll mark me down for Spencer Dinwiddie.
All right, you get Spencer Dinwiddie. All right, you can you want to do 3-point? I'll give you this in case you're going to steal mine. I don't want to go 2-for-2 with stealing yours.
So I was cheering for Eric Gordon last year, and he did win. It was that whole Indiana high school. I mean, it was amazing how it was with these three events. If Hayward beat Porzingis last year, you would have had IHSAA basketball players winning each of the three when you had Glenn, Eric Gordon, and then you had the potential for Gordon Hayward. So the 3-point contest, I'm going to go with Klay Thompson just because I felt like last year he was the big favorite and he did not win. I don't even think he made it out of the first round, and it was a big shock. Yeah. So I'll go in Klay's direction. He's a pure shooter. Eric Gordon won last year, so he'll have a little more pressure. Paul George, I think, was only in the 3-point contest because he did not originally make the All-Star team, and he's got shoes to sell in Los Angeles, so he had to be a part of something in the weekend. So I don't pick him as a 3-point shootout contestant. Probably the second choice for me would be Wayne Ellington, because I have that same attitude with him in terms of marking in that I think if he shoots, because I've seen him do it enough this year, I think he shoots, it's going in. But I'm going to go Klay.
Mine, again, comes with a huge bias, not necessarily liking the player, but watching them recently. And I watched Bradley Beal warm up, and so he has sold me. Bradley Beal was unbelievable. And he hit a couple open threes, but in warm-ups. All NBA players in general. I mean, even, like, it's amazing. Go watch Al Jefferson sometimes will shoot threes in warm-ups, and he'll hit, like, five.
Was that the famous C.J. Miles quote last year where he was talking to, it might have been Nate Taylor, and I don't even remember the article, but it was like, hey, NBA player, they're in the NBA, they can shoot. Yeah. You give Al Jefferson, you know, 5 feet and no one's guarding him, he'll knock down a three.
Yeah, and he does. Yeah. But I'll go Bradley Beal. I've seen him play well recently, and I've seen him do well in this warm-up, so I'll go Bradley Beal for my pick.
All right, so the Verizon Slam Dunk Challenge Contest. It's difficult.
Are we biased?
We are a little biased, yeah.
Victor, by the way,
talking
to this about an hour after Victor Oladipo bought his lunch. Not just you and me. He actually bought the entire company lunch. A very nice effort.
Also a day after he, after nearly getting a quadruple-double, stayed about an hour and a half after the game and took pictures with any child that was a member of the Pacers Kids Club last night. So it's one of those stories, Victor. Every day you think, is this guy real? And he continues to do things. Apparently it was his own idea. Wanted to treat everyone at the building, everybody that works for the team. They called them the team behind the team to lunch. So bought the lunch. Everybody got to have lunch, had a nice photo taken. Then he had a message to the employees about wanting to be here for many years to come. And I think that's something that people, given what's happened over the last year, really want to hear. And he knows what people want to hear, and he means it. So, we got to go with Victor, right?
All right, we'll go with Victor.
Let's pick second.
I'll go Larry Nance.
Okay. Rejuvenated with the Cavs.
Yeah. He can bounce.
I'll go Dennis Smith Jr. I think he can bounce too.
So can Mitchell. I like all these guys. This should be interesting. The dunk contest can be a crapshoot anyway, but the other thing Victor Oladipo has is he's trying to keep the title in Indy. He actually mentioned that as his first reason why he did it.
My idea for him, and I doubt he's listening, at least at this point in the podcast, and I probably won't get a chance to make my thoughts known, but I think he should have the three Pacers slam dunk champions stand somewhere in the paint. Darnell Hillman, Fred Jones, Glenn Robinson III stand there holding their trophies, because we know Darnell now has a trophy because he got one last year, and jump over all of them and then have them there. Because Indiana, I mean, if you think about Indiana, you think of dunkers. I mean, don't you? Corn, racing, and dunking.
Yeah. Well,
I did ask Darnell at lunch if he was planning to be in Los Angeles this weekend, and he did not let out that he is a part of any plans. So it still could happen. Hopefully there's hotel rooms if they do decide to go that route. And I'm totally just speculating, so I'm reporting that this is his secret dunk. Because if it did happen, it would be a total, you know, Vic and I being on the same page.
That would be a mic drop, though. Like, if that was the last, if he was in the final two and did that. I don't care how creative you are, Dennis Smith Jr. You're not beating that. All right, that's
but he's probably going to sing at some point, right?
Yeah, probably. Maybe he could
while he's
that.
Dunking.
Yeah, I've got a meeting I got to be in 6 minutes. Any final thoughts here?
you know, I do have one final thought. Yeah, send us your questions. I thought maybe an All-Star break podcast, we could kind of go off topic a little bit. And I was actually listening to Bill Simmons, and he has a podcast, The Repotters. And I think it's like sports reporters, but they talk about sports media topics. And he always rips on NBA broadcasts, League Pass broadcasts, and also pregame shows, and says he watches the games with the volume down, and he doesn't like the format of the pregame shows. And I think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting creative. And I think, you know, if you have some suggestions, we don't make the decisions for either one of our broadcasts. They were talking radio and television. If you have any random ideas, things you'd like to see on a Pacer broadcast, let us know. We could discuss and share our thoughts on why we do the things the way we do them, and our open-mindedness maybe to the future, but maybe counter as well a little bit to not everything Bill Simmons says is, you know, always the way, right, the be-all, end-all. Yeah.
Hey, that sounds good to me. So if you got what we asked,
maybe next month, maybe next Monday or Tuesday, we can get together and you know, send us a note. Maybe Twitter, Pat could open his DM, so you could actually send him a DM.
I think they are actually open.
Oh,
maybe I shouldn't have mentioned.
Slide
that
into Pat's DMs. Yeah, my DMs are open. But yeah, if you have any ideas, and or if you listen to that particular podcast, I just listened on the way down here, so it was fresh in my mind. But I was thinking, oh, we could kind of have some good topics to discuss.
I know they're open because people slide in and ask for tickets that I don't.
Exactly.
All right, he's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. Maybe we'll talk to you next week after the All-Star break. Pacers against Brooklyn at 7:30, right? So 7, I think, on the pregame show on Fox Sports and on the radio.
If 30 not, minutes before tip-off.
If it's not 7:30, just go 30 minutes before whatever. Yeah. You can catch it there. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.